Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
For this week's episode, we stay in the Lone Star State and meet Davey Devine, who is Director of Operations for Clovenheart Farm Sanctuary in China Springs, Texas. Clovenheart, which was founded in 2018, is a 501c3 nonprofit sanctuary run by the mother-daughter duo of Davey and her daughter, Tab Saber. Davey, who was born in the Philippines, was raised in Charlotte, North Carolina. Her daughter, Tab, was born there in Charlotte and was raised in Honolulu, Hawaii. And they eventually moved to Texas in 2016. These lifelong animal lovers and rescuers went vegan in 2017 and founded their sanctuary the next year. Davey has quite the amazing background, earning a bachelor's degree in English literature and a master's degree in education. She was the Phi Theta Kappa president while in school at the University of Hawaii, Manoa. And she later served as a middle and high school teacher in Hawaii prior to moving to Texas, and is a published author. So, Davey, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, hi. I'm super excited to be here.
Yes, we are very excited to meet you and learn about all the amazing things that you all are doing. So I love the idea of a mother-daughter founded sanctuary like you all have done. And what was it that truly inspired you and your daughter to team up to found Clovenheart Farm Sanctuary?
I think it's just something that stemmed from my own childhood. I just had a love of animals, always was rescuing little animals and helping animals, and definitely loved animals way more than I loved human beings, which all of us who rescue animals probably do. And just instilling that kind of love and respect and kindness and compassion in my child as she was growing up, and letting her know that, you know, you sit and you talk with your child and you just say, hey, you know, I always had this dream that one day I would have a farm and I would have all these animals and I would have saved them and we will all be happy. And, you know, that's kind of like where it all started with us. And so being the fantastic human being that she is, lucky enough to give birth to her, she decided that I was a worthy mother and bought this farm here in Texas. And we proceeded to start to make plans on how we could best use this land to do the most good to achieve our dream of helping animals, and eventually landed on becoming a sanctuary. But not, you know, it wasn't like, we're going to be a sanctuary. Yeah. You know, it was kind of like, I don't know. I cry so much, you know, when animals get hurt or die, I'm not sure if I can handle it. There might be a lot of that in running a sanctuary. So, you know, we had some questions and challenges and whether or not it was something that we should do. And yeah, it came down to that's something that we should do. And here we are.
Yes. And I love that. And, it's interesting that you talk about kind of having that dream of having a farm and how that molded into let's let it become a sanctuary. And it wasn't just from the very beginning, it has to be a sanctuary. And I think sometimes that that leads to even better situations because you go into it trying to figure out what you want it to be. So very, very interesting there.
Well, being a sanctuary is a very legal thing. It's just like you want to save animals, you want to rescue animals, and becoming a sanctuary was really more of a legality. So I think we would have done it regardless.
Yes, absolutely. Can you tell us a little more about Clovenheart Farm Sanctuary and what type of species do you all care for? How many total animals are in your care? Just kind of a 10,000 foot overview of the sanctuary as a whole.
Well, when we decided that we were going to rescue animals, we asked ourselves the big, most important questions. Where do you find them? Where do you find animals that need rescuing? And so we were kind of open. We weren't thinking about, we only want to rescue a certain type of animal. So we've got a little bit of everything. We've got horses, we've got donkeys, we've got cows, we've got goats, we've got sheep, we've got chickens, we've got geese. So we do a little bit of everything. So yeah, it is quite a mix.
And you know, a question that I love to ask people, especially with you having a wide variety of animals there, is what would you say is, if someone was just getting into the sanctuary world and said, I want sort of the easiest animal to rescue, or the one that has, I guess, is the least crazy, what would you say would be that ideal first species?
Oh my God, that is so funny question. does that exist? I know that if we had, as we grow, we'd like to really start to maybe focus more on pigs and donkeys. That is kind of where our heart has grown. Now that we've had a little bit of exposure to all the different types of animals, but if someone was first starting out, what would be an easy animal? Honestly, easy to care for, I would say pig, in terms of feeding and housing. And I feel like that's one of the least complicated. Not that they don't have their issues and the veterinary things that arise that you need to do to take care of, and of the same yearly kind of vaccinations, et cetera. But pigs are just easy going, like you feed them in the morning and then set them up for the day and they're good, you know, and just keeping them safe and keeping them pinned, those are all important things. But I find the least amount of work would probably, I would say, pig. So
yes, and absolutely. And I think an interesting part of pigs that a lot of people that don't know about them, as you spend more time with them, you realize they're more and more like dogs and things that are common companion animals. You just see a lot of those similarities in pigs compared to those animals. And I think that's part of what makes them feel like they're one of the easier species there.
Yeah, they're so fun. And I'm going to say, honestly, when we first rescued our first pig, I did not want to rescue a pig. I was like, I don't think I can love a pig. I don't know anything about pigs. I don't feel drawn to pigs. I don't know why I would rescue one, but okay, we'll take her and we'll see how it goes. I wasn't sure about it. And like instant love. They're so cute. And I hate to say that they're easier, but they're just, I guess, more lovable. And the day-to-day tasks aren't, you know, like you still get to have hoof trims and you still have to have tusk trims and you still have to do ear cleaning and you still have, I mean, there's so many things. That maybe they would be a little bit more incorrigible about in terms of their screaming and not wanting to do those things. But just pigs are just adorable. Like every little grunt, they're so communicative. Every little disagreement is just adorable. It's like, I want to lay here, I'm laying here. I want to lay here, I'm laying here. Oh, fine, I'll move. You know, like every little grunt is just adorable. So.
Yes, I tell people all the time, it's like having, and as far as like intelligence, this is where they rank. It's like having a whole bunch of 4-year-old children that have the strength of full-grown adults that are very hard-headed, and then throwing them all together, and that's what you get with pigs.
Yeah. Well, the mini ones, of course, you know, but the big ones, oh my goodness, they don't know, they think they're tiny. They don't know how big they are.
Yes, they're like Great Danes and other very large dogs that they think they're, the bigger they are, the more they think they're a lap dog or something.
And just love bugs, every one of them.
Absolutely. And I think that is the other misconception, is so many people when they think of pigs, especially as like pets or people being around pigs and loving pigs, they immediately think of mini pigs, which again, mini being a common misconception, they're not mini, they're just mini compared to a full-grown pig.
They're just low riders.
Yeah. Yes. So
brown.
But full-grown pigs, even at 800 and 1,000 pounds, are some of the absolute, from we do not have them here. We have mini pigs. But from everything I've ever seen and interactions I've had with them, they are absolutely some of the most loving animals that exist on the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, unfortunately, so mistreated in the general yes. public world. But, yeah, if everyone could know a pig, oh my gosh, I think their life would change.
It would be a totally different world.
It would.
So one thing I read on your website was that at Cloven Heart, you all are all about restoring dignity to the animals' lives, saving them from abuse, neglect, slaughter, and then healing their broken bodies and souls. What are some of the ways that you all help your residents heal and be strong again, find that peace and respect, and just learn to trust again?
Ooh, there's so many things that are important when you bring a new animal to a sanctuary. And then one is giving them time. One is giving them peace. One is having patience. One is not having expectations. You know, you just want to meet them where they are and see what they need and be available to them, right? So depending on how they come in, if they're like skinny, you need to feed them. You need to give them nutrition. You need to give them, you know, things that will heal their body from inside. You know, and then, of course, there's the veterinary care that applies, the Western medicines. And there's a lot of alternative care as well, depending on the situation and issue. But a lot of it, too, is just like just sitting with them and being present and just saying, hey, I'm here. Like, whatever you need, I'm making this promise to you. I will love you and I will keep you safe and I will never let anyone hurt you again. And I will do everything I can to make sure that you are happy for the rest of your life, you know? And so many of them believe that like immediately. And then many of them, it takes them a little bit longer, but the more you can just like, sometimes it's just sitting in their area and just waiting for them to go, okay, you might be okay. You know, so that's kind of like the body and soul stuff. Did I answer the question?
I think you did. I think you got to the root of it. And then I love the way that you said to meet them where they are, because I think that is such a key part of it. And that varies from animal to animal, just like you talked about. And I think just them knowing that you're there for them for once for the first time in a lot of their lives, someone is there for them. Not right. They are there for someone else. And so I saw that one of your all's mission at Cloven Heart is to nurture respect, empathy, and compassion for farmed animals through education, advocacy, education, and rescue. How much has your background in education helped you achieve this goal and reach people in different ways?
I think it's really communication. My education has taught me about understanding compassion, understanding how people feel, being able to put yourself in that. As a teacher, I had to teach students how to relate to characters. How do they relate to the characters on a personal level, or how do the characters relate to the world and with anything that might be going on? And how can they understand that deeper? And so a lot of what we do when we try to write about the animals or to tell their story or to share about them in social media is a lot about just like, you know, hey, this is where they've come from. This is who they are today. This is who they've always been and they've never been seen. And but you see them. You know them, you love them, you care about them, and we thank you for that. And let's see if we can help to encourage the world to start also feeling the same way.
Yes, and it's just like having worked in schools and taught in that as well, it's just like in the English class when you're, again, building up the characters and building up the plot, building up that whole story. It's the same exact thing with these animals, and it's amazing that when you can put all those pieces together, people finally start to make some of those connections that it doesn't seem like when they just hear about or drive down the road and see a cow in a field, they don't make that connection, and they don't understand that cow is an individual just like another person is, or just like their dog or cat is, or just like any of that. When you start putting names with that, and they start understanding that personality, and you start telling that story, it's amazing how that brings people together in ways that otherwise they wouldn't do for those animals.
Agree. There is definitely a lot of disconnect between people who say, I love animals, but I also eat animals. Oh, there's a cute cow in that field, but I will go eat a burger later. You know, or I'm in the grocery store. Let's get steak. Wait, that steak is that cow that you just appreciated and thought was cute. You know, well, maybe let's not eat them. You know, so there definitely is a lot of disconnect there.
Yeah, and that goes all the way back to one thing we educate and continue to do at outreach events is the fact that I think a lot of people still don't understand, especially in very like urban areas, people still don't understand that cows have to be pregnant to have milk. There's still a lot of confusion about chickens and laying eggs and what goes into that. There's just that, as you talked about, that disconnect between what people where people think their food comes from and where it actually comes from.
Yeah. So I'm definitely really grateful for the educational background that I have, especially how I had to prepare my students in the classroom to tell their stories or to write a story or to, write something about a novel that they read and those kinds of things. And, you know, so being able to create that kind of connection with other human beings to the animals that have been rescued or to animals, farm animals in general. So communication is definitely one of the strong suits here.
Absolutely. And so speaking of communication and education and outreach, and one of the really amazing programs that you all have that kind of helps with your mission is your all's For the Animals Humane Education subscription boxes. And what can you tell us about this awesome new like subscription-based program and what people can expect to receive or expect when they get their For the Animals subscription box?
Okay, well, honestly, when we started a sanctuary, part of it is advocating for animals. So the For the Animals box is a box that we created for people who love animals, who would like to learn more about animals, who can get that experience through this subscription box. And so there are, you know, a lot of boxes out there that are actually for dogs or actually for cats. And then there are boxes out there that are for human beings that tend to be more with style or with makeup and stuff. And so we just wanted to be able to find a way to maybe create more reach through humane education. And so the For the Animals box, I feel like, is something that it's just in its early stages, but we want to be able to hopefully create an experience. It's like Christmas. So for us, when we're curating the pieces that go into it, and then we are putting it together and getting ready to mail it off, and then, you know, putting our little booklet together, and we're like, with like information and knowledge and stuff like that, it's like exciting for us. It's Christmas. So we hope that whoever receives it is also like a Christmas experience for them too, because they don't know what they're going to get when they open it. But then they're going to go, Oh wow. I didn't know that. And so hopefully it's a wonderful learning experience on the receiver's end.
Yes. And what is it, if someone were to want to receive a For the Animals subscription box, do you know offhand how much it is for them to subscribe to receive that? I know there is some information on your all's website as well.
Yeah, on clovenheartfarmsanctuary.org, we do have a page dedicated to the For the Animals box. And it really, you know, just talking about advocacy for animals and learning about animals and building compassion for animals through that box. And the boxes can, there's one single box, it's $47 a month, or you can subscribe for 3 to 6 months for a little bit of a discount. But like I said, we're in our beginning stages, so hopefully we'll be able to find vendors or artists or crafters or creators who can supply things that'll maybe bring the cost down.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's something, if anyone's listening and you have a product or something you feel would be good for this type of box, think like a bark box, but for animal advocates and for people that that love animals and
absolutely.
Farm sanctuary people.
No, absolutely. You know, like I know that we're creating it, right? We're producing it, we're putting it out, and you know, trying to get people to definitely build the subscriptions up and everything like that. But we'd like to be able to get to the point where if we are banking that bark box subscription, you know, types of subscriptions, that, you know, we could start to incorporate other sanctuary information, other sanctuary animals into it. That's our goal. Like whenever we do anything, we're like, how can we be successful as a sanctuary? But then how can we also help other sanctuaries? And so one of the ways is that this box, subscription box, becomes very popular, then we want to start incorporating other animals. We have these little cards that we do, animal cards, so for our particular rescues and stuff. So we'd like to be able to incorporate something like that for other sanctuaries so that they can also have that, be introduced to the world through our box.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of like the cards. Like I think of as a kid collecting like the little baseball cards and football cards and all of that. And how amazing would it be if kids all over the country were collecting like playing cards for animals at sanctuaries? That would be amazing.
It's like, you get it. Exactly. That's exactly what we're hoping for.
Yes. And so another amazing way that you all have helped reach out to people and advocate and educate them is through your amazing books. And the first one I want to talk about is your most recent book that you published, titled Charlie's New Family. And first, before we get into a little more of the book, can you tell us a little more about that ginormous cow that inspired this book?
Okay, so Charlie is the reason we exist, basically. He is a cow that was living with a huge number of cows in the property next door to us. And that's something that happens in Texas, where people have like a little bit of land, and then so they just throw a bunch of cows on there and no one really lives there. And the cows just kind of mosey and do their cow thing and then multiply, right? And they take those cows and they sell those cows, and that's how they make a living. So Charlie was one of those cows, and there's always like one bull with a bunch of females and a bunch of babies. And that was Charlie. And Charlie was so easygoing, like as a bull, just easy and sweet and kind and curious and patient. And he just has all these beautiful qualities about him. And that's our first time ever encountering a cow up close. You know, we were city girls, you know, we weren't, you know, we were just driving down highways looking at cows and fields, but this was our first up close experience. And Charlie just won us over, and we just were always excited to see him. And you know, our first little couple rescues were sheep, and they were always excited to see him, and they would all graze together at the fence line. And it was just super cute and super fun and super awesome. And everything was fresh and wonderful, because it was the beginning of rescuing farm animals. And so he's just an amazing giant, you know, love bug, basically, with the cutest little freckles and the cutest little nose. And when the people decided that he were going to get rid of all their cows and try and sell the property, Charlie, we cried so hard, because we're like, oh no, because we hadn't seen them in a while. And we cried, and we were like, maybe we could have done something. Maybe we could have helped. Maybe we could have stood in their way. Maybe we could have fought for them. Maybe there's something we could have done to keep what had happened from happening. And then one day we drove by and we saw Charlie in the field and we were like, Charlie's still here. Damn it. We got to do something. That's our you know, definitive moment here. We have to do something. We have to save Charlie.
Yes. And that's an awesome story because I think it is amazing. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier is especially for people that are from a more urban area, that the first time you get out and really interact with some of these animals, it is, there's not even a way to describe it. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times at outreach events that we go to that people will come up and they're like, I've never met a goat, or I've never met a sheep, or I've never met a pig. I've never touched them. I've never talked to them or laid eyes on them. And this is amazing. It's so cool that connection and to see that with Charlie and see how Charlie eventually wound up with you all.
Charlie has a lot of female fans too.
Charlie is quite the looker. I mean, he is a beautiful, beautiful cow.
He is a hunk.
So what was it about Charlie's story that made it so important for you to write Charlie's New Family and share that with the world?
Well, you know, it was just an origin story. And, you know, in all honesty, like anything a sanctuary does or a nonprofit does is like, we hope we can make some money from this. But also, we hope we can help teach people more about compassion and empathy and, you know, kindness and respect towards animals, you know. And how did you get started? This is Charlie. Charlie is our origin story. And it was really just about how can we tell his story in a way in which, one, it isn't scary, but two, thought-provoking and maybe heartfelt. And really the dedication to the book is really for all the animals who were just like Charlie, who didn't make it to sanctuary. So because there have been a lot of animals in that situation. So maybe we can have less animals in that situation.
Absolutely. And I think that is the reality, the sad reality is for every Charlie that exists out there at a sanctuary, there are unfortunately 10, 20, 30, 40 times more, as far as the number of animals that unfortunately didn't get to land in that soft, safe, loving space. And unfortunately some of them wound up in some very bad places.
Yes.
And so I can't tell you how many times when we are at outreach events that, and I know you all, I'm sure have heard this as well. When you hear that phrase and someone's like, I want to start a sanctuary one day, or it must be so amazing running an animal sanctuary. And don't get me wrong. It is from our end, it's amazing, but it isn't always as fun or cute or cuddly as what people think. And that brings us to your other amazing book that we absolutely must talk about, that was released just about a year ago or just over a year ago, titled One Day I Want to Have a Farm Sanctuary, Things You Don't Know to Expect. And I absolutely cannot recommend this book enough. I could go on for days and days and days about how amazing it is. And whether you're a sanctuary founder, whether you're someone that hopes to start a sanctuary, whether you're someone that just loves animals, this book gives a raw, real, unfiltered, behind-the-scenes look at life at an animal sanctuary. It doesn't sugarcoat it. It doesn't hide the hard stuff. It brings things to life that occur every day in sanctuary life, and it really puts it on paper and really, really shows it. So what was it that inspired you to write this book and give such a real look at that sanctuary life?
Because people say those things and it's, they make it sound like it's so easy. Like it is such, is so, it is wrapped in a fairy tale ribbon, the idea of running a sanctuary. And we were the same way. And it is so hard, so hard. You know, I mean, the rescuing is the easy part. You know, the rescuing is like whipped cream, you know. But everything else that comes along with sanctuary and running it, it's challenging and it's difficult and it's heart-wrenching and it's reality and it's in your face and, you know, and you're going through the motions and you're trying to do the right thing and you're trying to do right by the animals and you're trying to learn everything you need to learn. And you're like, wait, I have to fundraise. Wait, I have to do social media. Wait, I have to do so many things and it's only one me or then it's only two me's. And then it's like, how are we going to get all of this done? And it's just as magical and wonderful it is in the beginning, then the reality starts to set in. You're like, hey, there's a lot more to running a sanctuary. And some people in this world like to learn things the hard way. I know one person, her name is Davey. And So it was just like, you can sit down and you're crying and you're like, you know, in the pitch black of night, trying to figure out how to fix a fence that somebody just, you know, pushed open after you convinced them to come back and you got to fix it and you're tired and you still have to put the chickens away. And it's like, we're just crying because you're so exhausted. And it's like, is anybody else fucking up this much? Am I the only person? You know, I was like, this sucks. So there's a lot of those moments, you know? And for some reason, I think some of us just love being punished and suffering and stuff. But honestly, you could say that about anything. You could say that about teaching. You could say that about being a manager, you know, at a store or, you know, there's just everything comes with its challenges. And, you know, you're so bright eyed and bushy tailed about everything. And it's just like, fuck, if I had known, like when I was thinking about just running a sanctuary or starting a sanctuary and rescuing animals, if I had known and lived through what I have already, if there was a book or someone who could like have told me this is going to kill you, you know, but you're going to realize how fucking strong you are because of it. And all the things that you just, it's just like things that you just did not know to expect. And it's like, somebody needs to tell people about this because there's too many people walking around going, oh, you just sit down and play with animals all day. That's so fun. I want to do that. And it's just like, you know, no disrespect to anybody who says that, because we need people who have this lovely, beautiful, positive view of animal rescue to start it. But maybe those people can be a little bit more informed, and that's hence the book, and maybe realize from the beginning and learn from the beginning through the book that here's some things that you don't know you're going to run into and you better be prepared for, because otherwise you're going to do the worst disservice to these animals that you rescue. And they're going to be abandoned again or rehomed again or have uncertainty again, or, you know, just so many things. And you made a promise to them and you better fucking keep that promise. And this book is letting you know straight up, here's the real deal. Can you handle it? You still want to open a sanctuary? Fabulous. Now you know what to do to make sure that you don't fucking fail these animals. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're fine. I was sitting here thinking and I was like, you know, if I had to think of another title for this book, it would be like The Sanctuary School of Hard Knocks.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it is. And I love it because it is. I mean, when I said it is raw, real, and unfiltered, all the way down to talking about the stories of at some point an animal is going to die and it's going to be your fault. And you're not going to, it's not going to be something that you did intentionally. I mean, it can be 100% accidental, but it's like, hey, I didn't know any different. I didn't know any better.
Right.
And to put that out there, that's like, I commend you all so much for that, because it's something that is not said. And a lot of times, a lot of sanctuaries sort of, it kind of gets swept under the rug that that's the reality of it.
Right. And there's a lot of sanctuaries that are smaller that struggle. There's a lot of, you know, feelings and stigmas around money and raising money and learning to ask for money and not feeling shame about asking for money, you know, that a lot of people have to get over. You know, there's situations where people pass, you know, get sick and need to close their sanctuary and they need to rehome their animals for those reasons. And, you know, and that happens. Because sanctuary people run themselves into the ground and we are the worst at self-care. And because we're constantly going because you have to take care of so-and-so and then so-and-so got hurt and you have to take them. There's just so much that you do and you don't eat and you're tired and you don't sleep enough and you, you know. And so there's just a lot of things that could ultimately ruin the dream.
Yes. And what has the reaction been like over the last year since you released the book?
Oh, here's what's really interesting is that writing or being a writer has always been something that I've wanted to do on a personal level. It's been my dream since a child, as well as having a bunch of animals and living on a farm. Wait a minute, I got lost. What was I saying? What was the question again?
What the reaction has been to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the reaction has been really positive. So I'm really thankful that I've been able to write and to create something. And I wrote this during June and July of last summer. And that's around the time that a bigger sanctuary that was really respected by many sanctuary people kind of like fell apart. Animals were hurt in that process and stuff. So it kind of like coincided a little bit, I guess, the publishing of the book and then, you know, along with that situation. And so I think it's like for anyone, reading it, I think it was just something like, in, as far as the sanctuary world was concerned, it was like needed information, like necessary information. And I'm so thankful that it was very well received by other people who have sanctuaries. And I know that there are people who are gifting the book to other people who have expressed interest in having a sanctuary. And so I'm thankful, because when you write a book and when you're a writer, you get that, you're so focused in the writing of it because the message is so alive inside of you. And then you get it done. And then I'll tell you, the writing part's the easiest part. The editing part is the worst part. and then, so you're the most critical of your work when you go, okay, I think I'm done. I think I'm ready to let it go into the world. And you're the most critical of it. And so you hope that somebody will read it. You hope that somebody will find it useful. And you hope that that it will be well-received and people aren't going, oh my God, what is this piece of shit? You know? So I've been really thankful. And I'm always, whenever somebody will make a comment or something about they have read the book and they like the book or something like that, I'm like, oh my God, somebody said this about the book. And it just like has been really exciting to me. So, and I'm so grateful and so thankful. And, you know, more writing to come.
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say is we're sitting over here like anxiously awaiting volume two, because I want to keep knowing all the things that I need to know when I start a sanctuary. And we're 2 years into this.
Yeah, no, I'm still learning the things, too, that are like blindsiding me. I'm like, what?
Yeah. See, every day you're like, how did I not know that?
No, it seems simple enough, right? You know, you have a little piece of property, you put up a little barn, you find an animal that needs a good home, you put it in the barn, you think life is just great. And it's just so much more complicated than that.
Absolutely. So if someone wants to to purchase or find either of those amazing books, Charlie's New Family and One Day I Want to Have a Farm Sanctuary, if they wanted to find those books, where can they do so?
Oh, they can, it's on Amazon for sale right now. And then they can also go to our website, clovenheartfarmsanctuary.org. And there's a page dedicated to the books that they can go and read more and click a link. So.
Yes. And if you're listening to this and you have not read it, I know personally, I have not got to read Charlie's New Family yet. That will be one of my next purchases. But One Day I Want to Have a Farm Sanctuary. If you have not read it, like, seriously, go buy it. It is well worth it. It's an amazing book.
Yeah. Thank you. I love hearing that. And that's amazing. And I hope that, yeah, like I said, I hope that, you know, you put something up like this out and you hope that it'll really be helpful to an individual, and it won't, they won't have to go through the hard knocks process like I had to, and still do on occasion. And then hopefully they can be like, okay, I can be prepared for this, or I can make sure, I can check with myself. I could check with my heart. I could check with my spirit. I could check with my knowing and ask myself, can I really do this? Am I strong enough? And can I follow through? Can I step up? You know?
And if you are one that went through it the hard knocks way, the book is really nice because it lets you sit back and go, oh, thank God I'm not the only one that this happened.
Yes. Yes. I mean, yeah, no shame in for me to tell, like, yeah, here's how I fucked up. You know, maybe you don't have to.
Absolutely. And it is amazing. I tell you, I think every situation that we read a story in the book, like every little chapter and every little section in the book, like I would look at my wife and I would be like, oh my God, this is the same exact thing that happened to us. And oh my gosh, this is the same thing that happened to us. And so it is, it's such a raw, real, unfiltered look at it. I love it.
Fabulous. Relatable. Awesome. Thank you.
Yes. So another thing you all do a good job of, and I know you talked about this in the book, is you all have found a good way to do some unique fundraising and really try to put that fun in fundraising. And, one of your all's ways you do that is with Charlie's Hay Angels. And again, going back to Charlie that we talked about earlier, what can you tell us about this really cool program and how it's helping you all cover one of your biggest expenses at the sanctuary, and how that's going?
Okay. Well, honestly, like, fundraising is the foundation of every nonprofit, along with volunteerism. So, fundraising is a really hard cookie, and learning how to do it and trying to come up with creative ways and trying to go. And then honestly, for Charlie's Hay Angels, which is like, Charlie's Angels, how cute, let's do that. But let's go Charlie's Hay Angels. And let's see, how many bales of hay do we feed these kids? And you know, this is how many angels we need, and just trying to be very pragmatic about it, you know. And maybe we can create something that would be, you know, like, hey, you're part of a special club and you donate a bale or you donate two bales and of hay. And, you know, let's just do something that's fun and interesting for you people, because you people are like the reason we can keep the kids fed, you know. So feeding, getting everyone fed and keeping them fed, and the challenges of fundraising, and just trying to, you know, just come up with something creative and unique and interesting, and hopefully worth being part of.
Yes. And if someone wants to be a part of that program and wants to become a Charlie's Hay Angel, where can they go and find more information on that?
Website, clovenheartfarmsanctuary.org. And we do have a page dedicated to that. It kind of explains a little bit. And we do these fun little giveaways for our donors and supporters who are part of that. And I mean, because, you know, if you think about it, I mean, $15 doesn't seem like a lot, you know. You're like, oh yeah, I could swing that once a month. And but you know, getting other people to believe that is a little bit more challenging. So, because $15 a month is a lot. That's, you know, that could be a Netflix bill, you know, or something. So, Yeah. So, but if you go, it'll explain it. And I think for people who love animals and people, especially people who love farmed animals and farm animal sanctuary, this kind of thing makes sense because the rescue part is so glamorous, you know, like everybody's like down for the rescue, but not everyone's down for the aftercare, you know? So getting them to, you know, send you money for an emergency vet visit is kind of easier than going, yeah, the kids are hungry. And can you help feed them and send us hay? It's a little less appealing. So trying to just come up with something that's a little bit more interesting, a little bit more fun, and a little bit more like rewarding for the donor.
Absolutely. And I love that you talk about that, because that is, whether it's feeding or whether it's annual vaccines or whether it's whatever that may be, those are some of the hardest things to continue fundraising for, because there's not that emergent story or that urgent, oh my gosh, we have to do this now, like there is for the rescues. And so it is, I love that you all found a fun, unique way to do that.
Thank you.
So we've talked about Charlie and how he was has been a huge part of the sanctuary and who you all are. And but are there any other residents that you would like to tell their story and maybe the impact they've either made on you personally or on Clovenheart in general?
I think there's a little bit of controversy in the sanctuary community about whether or not rescuing or purchasing an animal from an auction is considered rescue, because you're funding the people who will still continue to do it. They're not going to change their minds. They're not going to become better people. They're not going to realize that what they're doing is not right. Okay. So, but going to an auction is such an experience and a necessary experience for anyone who's even thinking about rescuing a farmed animal just on a personal level or becoming a sanctuary, because you need to see how it's done and how those animals are treated and how so many of those animals have given up. And it is hard emotionally. And it's not something, you know, like we've only been to one or two auctions. And that is how we rescued Symphony and Luca and Mama and Gambino and Bruno. And those were two separate auction attendances. And the thing about that is that you just see a commodity, you know, something that's not even considered valuable unless it's worth money, right? And this is a life. And then the animals that are waiting their turn to go to auction, they might be there for a week. Animals that are having their babies there, babies that are being stepped on, babies that are confused. It's very hard. And second rescue was Symphony. And Symphony passed this away this year. And she walked onto that auction ring and she had this presence. Now she looked like she was on death's door, but she had this presence. And we always used to love to watch her walk because she walked like a supermodel. Her head was in the air and she just had a certain prance about her walk and her gait. And it was just special and beautiful. And, but that day she was so skinny and just bones. And we were learning about the auction. So we were sitting next to her and like, oh, what is that? Why is it starting at this number? And why is it going down? And they're like, she's used up. Nobody wants her. And I was like, you know, there were still people that were going to take her. And Tab was just like, we'll take her. And I was like, we don't have any way to get her home. you know, so because she was so big. And but we figured it out, and she and Luca came home, and Luca was a little goat, and he was very sick, and we did not know that. And see, people are sending animals to auctions who are sick. And those are the animals that are getting slaughtered and fed to other people, you know, and just simply because they didn't care. They don't want to spend money on an animal that's sick. They're going to just kill it anyway. They don't care. And Symphony was right up there. She was used up. She had was a Nubian. She was large and she was done. She was done with life. She's like, I'm done. I'm out. And we got her home and we didn't know if she was going to make it through the night. And she wouldn't even get up. And we had to like carry her into her stall. And she did get up eventually. And I looked at her and she looked at me and she was just so vacant in her face. And she looked at me and I looked at her and I, with tears in my eyes, I said, I promise you. And that's why her name is Symphony, because she was a song. She was music, you know. And I said, I promise you, I will keep you safe and I will feed you and I will not let anyone hurt you. And I just trust me. Give me a chance. Let me do this for you. And something about the way she looked at me is like, I think she understood me. And I think her face changed. And I think she really saw me. Like our eyes were like so like together, you know? And I was just like, fuck, she knows what I'm saying to her and she's going to let me. And I was like, this is great. And so embarked our wonderful, wonderful relationship in which I would be in the barn cleaning and she would just, I would try to encourage her to go out and she didn't want to go out. She was scared of outside, you know, and I wondered, have you just lived inside a barn? Have you just lived inside a stall making babies? I mean, what's going on? You know, outside is fun. It's fresh air. It's green. I had to convince her and I would push her out and she just would run the length of the barn and just scream bloody murder. And if you've ever heard a Nubian goat speak, it is like they're being murdered. It is loud. And I was embarrassed. And I was like, people are going to hear you and they're going to think I'm hurting you. Like, stop, you know, that she would just be looking for me because she needed to be with me. She needed to see me. She needed to be next to me. She needed to know that she was safe. And eventually she got her courage and eventually she got better. And she had these wonky little horns. They weren't symmetrical. One was up, one was down. And she had this beautiful face and these eyes that eventually became full of life. And she learned to be happy. And of course she got well, she put on weight. She got healthy. She was eating good. But she learned to love life. She learned to love outside. I would walk together in the field. And she would just be right there by me, you know. And she learned to love life. And I was so thankful and so grateful that I was able to keep my promise to her. And she trusted me and allowed me to love her. And she was my first goat I've ever kissed. She would just like come and just lick my cheek. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is great. This is cool. She was fun and she was playful and she was just energetic and she was fierce. Like she got to this point where she was fierce. Like she would hold her ground and, you know, if any of the other animals would like try to think that they could run over her. She was like, oh no, we don't do that. So if Charlie is the reason we started Cloven Heart Farm Sanctuary, Symphony is the heart in Cloven Heart Farm Sanctuary.
Yes. And Literally, as you're telling her story, I pulled up social media and was looking at the pictures and videos of her, and she's absolutely, absolutely gorgeous.
I know, isn't she? Yeah.
And goats, I will tell you again, for I know a lot of the people that listen to this are sanctuary owners. For the ones that are not, if you do not have experience with goats, they are one of those species. I will tell you personally, we do goats and we do mini pigs and we do sheep. Goats are literally life-changing, transformational animals. If you have not spent time and sat with and had a relationship with and understood goats, find a goat, rescue a goat, do what you got to do, because it will change your life.
Okay, I'm like with you 100%. Goats are so freaking amazing. But I'm going to tell you a funny story, because we knew nothing about goats and we rescued two little twin babies, Hermione and Jenny. And they were so sick. And they were young, you know, like we knew what we were expecting and getting into with Symphony, but these two were young. And we had watched all those cute goat videos. We had watched the bouncing happy babies who were just like, you know, parkouring off of everything. And these two girls, they just stood there and stared into space. They did nothing, nothing. We're like, how come they're not acting like other goats? You know, so, you know, this is early in our year. So we were just like very confused and we didn't know, like, why are they acting like that? That doesn't make sense. You know, they're not acting like fun goats. This is not fun, you know? So, of course, they were sick and that's the only thing that they could do. But they, of course, became fun.
Yes. And that is the hardest part is when you're in this world. Again, you see the videos and like you said, you see the little goats parkouring off everything and they're so much fun and they're climbing on everything and they're doing this and doing that. And you do, you get them home and they're like Symphony was when she arrived to you. You're like, can I just get you to stand up? Can I just get you to eat? Can I just want the little things.
Right.
So another topic. And this goes right into what we just talked about. This is perfect that you've talked about on social media, and in your book, is the difficulty of learning to deal with different veterinary emergencies, and especially those that can arise in the middle of the night or on the weekend, and at those times when you don't necessarily have an emergency farm vet. That can make that farm visit. What is it like, especially with you all having multiple different species, and what is it like to be prepared for an emergency at any moment in this world, especially with having a variety of different species to deal with?
You learn to be tough, and you learn to give shots. And because anytime you take a farm animal to a vet, you need to be so focused, hyper focused on how are they doing it? What are they doing Ask them questions. How much, you know, anything you can ask, because most likely you'll have to either give a second and third dose at home or give a life-saving dose while waiting for a vet to show up. So there's a lot of like things that you have to learn to do, and you just gotta power through. My duck, Trixie. Trixie got sick, and I took Trixie to a vet in a couple cities away. And that's the thing about people with farms who run farm sanctuaries, they will drive to other states, you know, just to find the best care for an animal that might be hurt. And so I drove a couple cities and it wasn't really that far, but it had been so challenging for us to find people who don't treat farm animals like food. And to for them to find veterinarians who are willing to work with you and not like talk at you, but talk with you and willing to help you figure things out and look outside the box or think outside the box. I actually took him to a vet. He was sick. I was doing a lot of Googling. I'm like, what's going on? What could this be? Got him to a vet. The vet literally was like, you know, I don't really know anything about ducks, but they were a farm vet. They were in the country and they had cows and stuff that were in their yards. And there's a lot of veterinary care that is very high end and very well researched for horses, not really for ducks, not really for goats, not, you know, pigs, yes. I guess maybe depending on the state that you're in. Because pigs are like such big food animals. So, you should have seen me like first one. I'm like, why am I here? And you're telling me you don't know anything about ducks. You're giving him a shot and you're telling me I now have to go home and give his second shot and his third shot. And I don't know how to do that. And even though she showed me, and I remember when I finally had to do it and I'm sitting there with Trixie and he's so unhappy with me and I'm trying to do my best and I'm crying. I'm like, I'm so sorry. You know, like I'm trying to save your life and I don't know what I'm doing and I don't want to hurt you and I don't mean to hurt you. And, you know, we got through it and now I'm like an expert, such an expert at giving shots, you know? And, so veterinary care. And I know that there's issues, you know, but it's veterinary care is kind of very similar with like human care. Sometimes you just don't know what's going on. You know, the symptom. You don't really know what's going on and it could be this and it could be this and it could be this. And every time it's always like, well, let's just wait and see. Or, you know, so sometimes it's like that with farm animals, you know, it's just like, well, let's just wait and see. We're not really sure. It's not really acting like this. It could be this. There's no other symptoms. So it can't be that, but it still could be. So there's a lot of frustration sometimes with getting the good veterinary care and finding someone to come help you. And, you know, and you're like, I'm just trying to save his life. And I just want him to be better. And I just need to know what to do. And, you know, and it's, yeah, you manage, you learn, and you ask questions. And sometimes you just have to have hard conversations about like, hey, veterinarian person, I respect you. I respect your education. You clearly know way more than me. Sometimes that's not always true, but you know, I just would love if you could help me save this animal and, can we try something else? Are you willing to do this? Here's some medication I learned about. Do you have it? Can you give it to me? You know, so it's a lot.
Absolutely. And I think the first thing, is, and this can be the hardest at times, is walking into an environment and it being non-judgmental that you're trying to save the animal and that the first option is not euthanize. And that's a hard thing to get past because a lot of times when it comes to farmed animals, when something's going wrong or something's not perfect, or whether that's like congenital birth defect or whether that's an injury, they're a broken leg. That right. They could obviously do an amputation and fix or do surgery and fix depending on the severity of the break. And they'll be like, well, we can euthanize. And I'm like, no. Hey, no.
Right. I was in a veterinary room with a rooster once who was sick. And they were literally, I heard people on the other side of the door like, why did she bring a rooster in here? Like that was like a silliest thing anyone could do. You know, but when you see certain animals as food and you live in an environment where people grow up going, well, if the animal's sick, you just cull them. You know, if the animal is sick, you just send them to auction. Or if the animal's not doing well, you know, like, you just don't really care and you forget about them in a backfield and let them starve to death. You know, like, there's certain policies that happen and patterns that have happened in a certain cultures and stuff. And so, yeah, it can be really ridiculous situation for someone to go, you care about this tiny little rooster? Like, why? Like, you can get another rooster, or, you know, and it's just like ridiculous. And you have to learn to be thick skinned and not let it make you feel like, you know, bad and stuff. So, but yeah. And then the best piece of advice I could give to anybody who wants to have a start a farm sanctuary is that if you're going to like focus, say, on goats, get to know all the people who are experts in goats as far as farm sanctuaries, the ones who like have years and years of raising, not raising, but rescuing goats, you know, because they've been through it all, you know? And so, yeah, so find there should be a sanctuary. And I have this, I have a sanctuary that I go to if I have a goat issue. I have a sanctuary that I go to if I have a pig issue. I have a sanctuary that I go to if I have a cow issue. You know, like they're the people that I respect, and I you know, call them or send them an email, and I'm like, hey, so this happened, can you help me? Because sometimes I want to have knowledge, so, and that's something that's necessary these days, especially with farm animals. You want to gain as much knowledge as you can in terms of what could possibly be the problem, what medications are you going to need, and how long will it take to fix this issue? What are the potential outcomes? Da 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 da. And you have to, sometimes you have to empower yourself with this knowledge and take it with you to the vet. Because sometimes there were many times, like with Luca, when he was rescued with Symphony, we didn't know. We didn't know, and they didn't tell us. We could do this, this, and this, and this to save his life. And this is the things that we learned afterwards, you know? So when Jenny got sick with polio, gold polio, we learned. So when we got her to the vet, it was like, this is what it is. And they literally would note right in the notes, like, they were butthurt that we were fucking diagnosing, because we're not a fucking vet, the situation, you know? And but they wrote it in a very polite, professional way. You know, that here's the situation, here's what I need from you, can you give me this? You know, and they would, like, sometimes, like, the first vet was kind of like hesitant, but he's like, fine, I'll give it to you, but she's gonna die, and why are you crying? Like, I was snot crying, like, I'm gonna throw up, he needs to help her, she, you know, like that kind of ugly cry. And he was looking at me like I was the weirdest person in the world to be having this much emotion over a goat. She's probably gonna die, but here, take this. You want this, here, take it. Be gone, you know, da da da. And so then I had ended up having to take her to a second vet, and who was upset that I had pre-diagnosed and learned all this stuff, and said, because sometimes they don't tell you. And when you're the patient, you don't know what to ask. You just assume that it is what it is, and the person is going to tell you what you need, and all be well. But sometimes there's a lot of other stuff that can be done. And if you can learn about it beforehand and be armed, you have a stronger chance and a better chance of helping save the life.
Absolutely. And I love that, like you said, go in. One thing that threw me right back to it, this was before we were a sanctuary, but again, if you've never said it, at a vet's office with a chicken in a carrier and everybody else around you has, like, cats and dogs and other animals, and they're looking at you like you're crazy, until you get to that point, you just don't understand. It's a different, it's a whole different experience.
It really is.
So, yes, I love that you brought that story up. But one thing that I saw on, again, browsing social media, is that I saw one specific resident there that really piqued my interest, because it was a species that we personally love, that was not a farmed animal species. And that was a sulcata tortoise. And I know that we just literally talked on our episode with Life with Pigs a couple weeks back. We talked with them because they were in the process of building their building their pen, because they had a sulcata tortoise coming there that they were rescuing. And we had previously rescued a sulcata tortoise. And so what can you tell us about how caring for something, an exotic animal such as sulcata tortoise in this case, how that compares to caring for your normal farmed animal species?
Okay, just to take a step back, Jenny did survive, by the way. She got better from goat polio. Okay, so Manana is a tortoise, a sulcata tortoise. He is a riot. And I'll tell you what, any animal that gets rescued by a farm sanctuary has really literally hit the lifestyles of the rich and famous. The human founder is not rich and famous. The sanctuary itself may not be rich and famous, but the fucking animal is gonna live large. So it's like every animal is like, you want them to have the best of everything. And so, I'm not gonna say Manana does. He doesn't have the best of everything, but we've got plans. You know, we want to build this and do this and create this and da, da, da. And you think it's just a tortoise, but something about him is so freaking exciting. And when you feed him and you just sit and you watch him eat, like you're like in a 50s movie with a girl sitting across from her boyfriend in a soda shop, a malt shop, watching him, you know, drink his strawberry shake, and your chin is in your hands, and you're just like, you know, it's like, it's such a great experience to just sit and watch them eat.
Yeah, they're absolutely mesmerizing. If anybody's never like seen them in person, sulcata tortoises are amazing.
Oh my God. But you sure do have to, have a lot of space for them. And yeah, there's just so many things, and they're really rascals. They really are like a great escape artist. And knock on wood, we haven't had a great escape yet, but and I don't know how we haven't, because he sure does try. He tries.
Yes. And so one last topic that we wanted to talk about tonight, and this is something that we just talked in depth with Hodgepodge Rescue, that's just north of you all in the Dallas area. We talked about them on our last episode but I have to bring it up again. And that's dealing with the extreme weather in Texas, especially heat this time of year. I know they're in China Springs. I just looked it up earlier today that every day since July 17th, except for one day when it was only 99 degrees, it's been above 100 degrees every single day for almost a month and a half now. What are some of the things that you all do? Obviously, being right there in one of the hottest like heat pockets of the country, what do you all do to help keep your residents cool in just the smothering summer heat?
Honestly, when we moved here, we did not know it was going to be this intense, because we came from Honolulu, where it was just like literally like low 80s like every day and sunshine, you know, for the like 99% of the year. And It was just so comfortable temperate wise. But coming here, our very first summer here, it like was a, it kind of made us think that every summer was going to be like that, because it was such a nice summer. It wasn't super hot. It was really nice, you know? And so we thought every summer was going to be like that. And then the next summer, No, next summer, intense heat, drought, all that. And so one of the things when you move to Texas is you have to start to learn the patterns of summer, of the weather, because we live in a very weird spot here in China Spring, where sometimes really bad weather can affect all around us, but we don't really get hit with it. And normally, like this year, we actually end up getting a hailstorm, which was unusual, apparently, for all of Texas or all of this area. And, you know, because sometimes and people in Texas will tell you, it's just like, oh, it's going to rain. You know, give it a couple minutes. It'll stop. And or sometimes it'll be like, oh, it's not going to rain. And then you're like in a freaking storm, you know, like that happened to us today. There we had a rainstorm, which is great because it cooled everything off and everyone off and everyone was super happy. So each summer you can expect that the certain months are going to be the hottest months, which is usually July and August, and things start to cool down in September. The winters are pretty mild, moderate, temperate. But the summers can be really intense. And so, last summer was not the same. Last summer was more bearable. This summer it was maybe more intense. And even though the temperature will say, oh, it's only 102, it's actually like really 112, you know? And then there'll be some days where like, oh, it's 106, but it only feels like 99. So I don't know how that happens. And then there's certain spots on the sanctuary where it seems like all of the heat is super intensely focused. And, you know, and then of course shade trees. So gotta love a shade tree, because if there's a good breeze blowing, it feels great. And and unfortunately we didn't move to an area that had a lot of trees in our fields and stuff. So we do have to make amends. And each animal is very specific about what they need and what they can handle. And like the goats, like 105 degrees, they're in the middle of the field, like having fun. No problems whatsoever. Donkey, no problems whatsoever. Horses, no problems whatsoever. But I was really surprised. I think our cows are spoiled, because Charlie, when he moved here, he never had any kind of housing or shelter. He just had an open field and a bunch of trees. And so when we came here, we were like, look, Charlie, here's a stall for you. It's like an open stall he can go into whenever he wants to. And the boy loves it. And then it's like, here, Charlie, here's a fan. He's like, oh my God, what's that? He's like, I love it. So he has a fan. You know, this summer he has two fans. And it's been really hard on the cows this year. So misters, ice, this, each animal has a very specific need when it comes to staying cool. Keeping everybody warm tends to be a lot easier, but keeping everybody cool from the heat is a lot more challenging. So the chickens, if you pour some water on the ground and then you throw a bunch of ice on the ground on top of it, they love it. They will lay there and sit there and just be comfortable under a shade. You know, it's great for them. So we do a lot of that for them. So each animal is a little different. The horses, sometimes they're like, I really would like to get sprayed down. And I was like, fabulous. Here you go. I'm dying of heat, but as long as you're fine, you know, so he's standing out there spraying them down. Charlie loves to get sprayed down with the hose too at the end of the day. We use a lot of water during the summer with running misters all day for certain folk, like the turkeys. So the turkeys cannot handle any kind of heat, cannot at all. So chickens are hardier than the turkeys are.
Yes. And how, I know you all have geese. How do your all's geese do with the heat?
The geese are fine. I know, because they have like little pools. And that's one of the things when we rescued geese and ducks, I did not think. I never thought, oh, we don't have a natural pond, but we can do, you know, like tubs of water, like play, you know, pools, kiddie pools and other kind of pool structures for them and stuff. So and I seriously have pond envy all the time, because I'm like, I wish I had a pond for you guys. I'm so sorry, you know. So I'm so apologetic about that to them. But honestly, they're fine. They have their little tubs of water that they like to get into. And they handle it. They actually handle heat better than the chickens do. The chickens will spread out their wings. They'll open their mouth, open mouth to breathe. You know, like I'm hot and stuff. That's why we go out and we take ice, you know, a couple times a day, and water and misters and stuff. So they don't overheat. And then, but the geese, if they've got their little pool, and then if it's really, really hot, I'll put a mister out and they'll all stand under it. So it's super cute. So they're fine.
Awesome. And that was something when we rescued geese earlier this year here, I was shocked on our hottest days. Like you said, they seemed less affected than the chickens in that did. So I was kind of curious how that was there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, as intense as it is, I was surprised who's handling it better than others.
Yes. So if someone wants to find out more information about Cloven Heart Farm Sanctuary, where can they do that? What is that website again? Because I know that's one big place you all direct.
Oh my gosh, did I not mention our website at all?
Oh, I know you have mentioned it. I just want to mention it again.
No, I'm making a joke. I'm being silly. I've only said it 50 times, but I will say it again. And no criticism to you. That's not pointed at you. I'm just making a joke.
No, you're fine.
ClovenHeartFarmSanctuary.org. So that's where you can find out more information about us. And so hopefully that will be wonderful. And then, of course, we have an email and a way to contact us through the website. Okay. Or through our Instagram.
That's what I was going to ask. Are you all, what social media are you all on?
We have Instagram, the necessary evil of social media. Instagram, Facebook. I think that's kind of, TikTok. I think that's it.
Perfect. And I will tag all those in the show notes as well, so that anyone that wants to find them can do so. And then the last thing is, what can our listeners do to help support Cloven Heart Farm Sanctuary in your mission, as we said, to nurture respect, empathy, and compassion for farmed animals through advocacy, education, and rescue? What can they do to help you all?
Oh, to help us?
Yes. What can they do to support you?
Yeah. Give us all your money. No, I mean, honestly, it's just so easy. Just give us all your money. That's all we need, and everything will be fine. Ha ha. But no, I mean, yeah, if you wanted to support us, you know, buying any of our merch or any of our products that we bake, like the books or for the animals box, subscribe to that, join us on Patreon. But in all honesty, like the best thing that anybody can do where they're at locally is to find a farm sanctuary near you, because farm sanctuaries need volunteers. And go meet a pig, go meet a goat, go meet a cow in real life, and maybe it'll change your mind about some of the decisions you make in your day to day. And, you know, grab a shovel and scoop some poop and help another farm sanctuary locally near you. Volunteer once a month, volunteer twice a month. Every little bit helps, because the more hands there are to support a farm sanctuary and make light of the work that's done on a daily basis, and it's going to just benefit the rescues there. And those rescues get to learn to be socialized and to learn what kindness is from other people other than the people who founded it or take care of them daily. And they get to learn that other people can be kind too, and they get to look forward to seeing you. So if you can do that for a farm animal at a farm sanctuary near you, that would be the best thing that you can do to support animal rescue.
Awesome. Davey, we thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate all that you and your daughter Tab are doing to provide a safe and loving home for the residents at Cloven Heart for the rest of their lives, so that they know nothing but love, happiness, and family. And more importantly, thank you for all you are doing to help the world change the way it treats animals.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I certainly know that there are a lot of people, a lot of farm sanctuaries out there that are working towards that change. And I hope that we can eventually see a world and live in a world where animals are loved and respected and have dignity in their daily lives and happiness and safety.
Thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.